The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So people are still coming in, but we could start with some questions if any of you have any questions you'd like to ask, and then I'll introduce what we're doing. Anybody from the last weeks, anything you want to ask about the meditation or anything?
If it's okay before I ask my question, I just wanted to thank you very much for this course. It's been really helpful, and to all the volunteers who came and answered my many questions. Thank you very much.
Great.
So my question, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of futile to ask, but I'll ask anyways. Why is it that people have emotions that are waving their flags to be paid attention to? How come it can't be like a cut on your arm and it just kind of heals itself and goes away? It feels
I see.
Last week you said it'll stay until you look at it.
Well, I think, yes. So there is this idea that emotions left alone will heal. Because every emotion is a process that takes energy and effort to engage in for the system, and so it's work. And so as things relax, they'll heal, they'll dissipate. However, what happens is often is that we're constantly reinforcing them. And so if we're constantly reinforcing them, they'll persist for a lifetime, for a long time, unless we can get to under the surface and see what the factory is, see what's triggering them, what is it that's recreating them over and over again. And that's why, so I don't know if they're literally flags calling attention, but it's just a figurative way I say that, it's useful to take some emotions as an indicator that there's something more deeper to look at. And so if you then shift the attention away from the surface emotion to that which is deeper, then you get to the factory, you get to the source out of which it's arising. And if you hold that in attention, that will dissipate or relax or settle. And when that's settled, then it won't be producing these secondary emotions anymore. Does that make sense?
It does mostly. Can you give an example?
Yeah, so anger, for example. Anger can be a very simple and direct emotion that, has its role in our life, perhaps. But persistent anger that we get caught in and just keeps coming, reoccurring, we're just kind of simmering and simmering, it usually has one of two things underneath it. It doesn't have to be only these two, but this is a common thing. It's either fear or hurt. And so as long as the hurt or the fear is not attended to, it's going to be in the background there, kind of doing its thing. And as it does its thing, it's going to keep throwing out these, the anger thing. Anger is a response to that, a reaction to that. But if you can get down behind the anger and feel the hurt or the fear, then there's a whole different animal. And you hold that with awareness, then that can sometimes heal itself. It doesn't need much. And that's one of the, it doesn't always work this nicely, but one of the great gifts of this mindfulness practice is when we can hold things non-reactively in awareness, that the system or the thing itself knows what it needs to do and will begin to unfold. And many times our inner life knows better than you do what needs to happen. And it's kind of like you make space for it to happen if you hold it in awareness. Awareness is kind of like giving breathing room for something. Does that make sense? A little bit more sense?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Are there anything else before we start? So it was very poor planning to schedule this on the seventh game of the World Series. So for those of you who felt torn between, thank you for coming here, and some of you are looking at the score, it looks like. it's ready there. Let us know if something important happens. And so, welcome back. So this is the fifth week, last week of the five-week intro to meditation. And so what I'd like to do today is to do a little bit of a review and a guided meditation based on what we've done so far. And then, with that as a foundation, discuss a little bit how you can go further with this practice. Because in Buddhism, mindfulness practice is one of the most important, profound practices we have. In ordinary life, life tends to go a lot better if we pay careful attention. If we bring this mindfulness to our life, to what's going on, it can look more deeply. And so how we can make how we go further with it is kind of the task today. And with that comes some of the wisdom aspects of mindfulness, how some aspects of how mindfulness brings forth wisdom and understanding. So in terms of the basic meditation practice, so Buddhism has a number of kind of representational symbols for all kinds of things, but for the human, sometimes there's a symbol for the human being. And that is the human being, and there's a painting, very famous paintings that have this as a... And that human being is like a one-room house that has five windows and a door. Small little house. And the five windows are considered to be the five sense doors. So eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the body sense. How we connect to the world, see the world. And we see the world through the windows of these senses. And we don't know anything about the world unless it comes through those windows, through those the senses that... But then there's a sixth sense, which is the mind door. And that's what how we know what's going on internally. We know our inner life, our mental life, our emotional life. And there has to be some kind of perception that goes on. So these six, so five windows of perception and one door of perception. So that's what the door is about. And the this house image. So then imagine that in that house, in the middle of the floor, this one room little thing, there's an easy chair. Very comfortable, the most easy, comfortable recliner perhaps you've ever been on. And it's an easy chair where you can just be really easy, you can be at ease, you can be relaxed, and you're at home. At home is where you just kind of unwind, and it's even okay to walk around in your underwear. But you know, just relax, just yourself, and you know, just feels really good to be at ease at home like that. And then, but the windows are open and the door is open. And then as you're sitting in your easy chair, you see out the door, you see there's a neighboring cat that walks by the door. And next thing you know, you're up and out of the house to pet the cat. And then eventually you go back into your easy chair and rest there. And you look out the window, and out the window you see the neighboring dog going in the same direction as the cat. And now you're alarmed, and so you jump up and reach out the window and yell at the dog to go away or something. And you can make it back to your chair, and you're at ease again. And then you look out another window, and, you know, it's an ice cream truck has come. And so that gets you out of your chair, and you go chasing the ice, but it's already going down the street, so you have to chase it and run after it. It's going faster than you, so you come back all exhausted. And so you get the idea. You see different things. In meditation, the idea is not to leave your easy chair, not to leave a relaxed, centered place of being, no matter what arises in any of the sense doors. So if you hear a sound, you don't get involved in the sound, you don't chase it, you don't criticize it, you don't leave your chair because of that sound. If there's if you see something, then you don't get up out of your chair to go and engage in what you're seeing. With your eyes closed in meditation, one of the primary things you can be aware of is the mind door, what goes on inside. And the idea is you don't even leave your easy, relaxed place of awareness, no matter what comes up in the mind. You might think about something really wonderful, how great it would be if the Giants won the World Series. And so you leave your chair to kind of think, strategize how that can be. Or you can be disappointed and they don't. And so you leave your chair because you get involved in all the thoughts that about, you know, they didn't win or something. So the idea is you can watch things go by, but you don't get involved. You don't leave your chair. You don't leave a relaxed, open, aware place. In the chair, you're aware. You're paying attention. You know what's going on. But you don't leave the chair. You don't go out to it, go out to things. So that's kind of a little bit one another image. That last week was the image of the boats going down the river. This is a little bit more comprehensive because it's all the doors. And nothing that you know, it's not possible to know anything at all unless it comes through one of these six, you know, openings of perception, the windows and the doors. And so if you learn how to see things arise at these different sense doors, different perceptions, different thoughts, feelings, whatever might arise, and just leave them alone. Let them just be there. Let them go through the window. Don't leave the house. Don't leave your easy chair. And that's an image for meditation. So with that, we'll do a session of meditation. A simple session. So you can take a comfortable posture and perhaps sit a little straighter than you normally would. And gently close your eyes. And then to settle in to here and now, it's helpful to take a few long, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, to feel your torso rib cage expand, like you have massage from the inside. And then as you exhale, relax. Settle back in. Breathing in, connecting to your body, exhaling, letting go. Breathing in deeply, on the exhale, perhaps you can soften your mind, letting go of your thoughts. And then letting your breath return to normal. And taking some moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places that you can relax in your body. It might be possible to relax, soften around the face. Around the eyes, the forehead. And sometimes this relaxing doesn't look like much. It just may be almost barely perceptible, easing up, lightening up, making space for. It might be possible to soften around the shoulders. Maybe as you exhale, let the weight of your shoulders help the shoulders settle down, be pulled down away from the neck. It's also helpful to soften the belly. Let the belly hang forward and down. Some people consider it very unbecoming, but it's very nice for meditation. Soft, relaxed belly. And if there's any places that are in your body where you feel like you're bracing against life, or held against life, as you exhale, perhaps you can soften a little bit around that. So then take a few moments to feel your body in a global way. Whatever way your body is fine. And if it's possible, see if you can let yourself be at ease with your body. be easy with whatever you find in your body. If there's tension or restlessness or tiredness, be easy with that. Be at ease. Ease up a bit. And then you might feel what's happening in your heart. Take a few moments to feel your emotional state, how you are, how you feel on the inside. And then as you exhale, see if you can set your heart at ease. Let yourself maybe be easy with how you are on the inside. Being easy with how you feel. And then notice how you feel in your mind, what's going on in your mind, your thoughts, your concerns, any pressure or tension, concerns you have. And in whatever way might be easy, set yourself at ease in your mind. Be easy. Ease up. It's okay. And then letting yourself be at ease as you can with how things are. Even if things maybe are uncomfortable. Be easy with that. And then begin to be aware of your breathing. But don't go out to your breath. Don't leave the easy chair. Let the experience of the body breathing come to you. The body breathes itself. And that is known in awareness. Becoming aware of the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. Notice how the experience of breathing in is different than the experience of breathing out. Not by thinking about that or analyzing it, but by quietly feeling the difference. as you exhale, letting go of what you're thinking about, like it's a thought balloon that wanders, that floats away. And then staying relaxed as much as you can, at ease, calm. Notice what the strongest sensation in your body is. But don't leave your easy chair. Don't need to react or do anything about it, except be aware that it's there. Sense letting the sensation show itself to you while you're calmly, relaxedly open, aware to the experience. And then come back again to your breathing. And as you feel the exhale, sometimes it's nice to follow the exhale all the way to the end until there's no more sensations of exhale. Open your awareness to the sounds that are around you. See if you can stay relaxed in your easy chair. Just let the sounds go by without getting involved or leaving your chair. And then coming back to your breathing. Maybe it's a little bit like the waves washing up and down off the shore. So the rhythmic movement of breathing in, breathing out in your body are like waves across the shore of your body. And then become aware of how you're feeling, your emotional state, mood, mental state. It's everything is okay, there's no problem here. Just be aware of how it is, even if it's quite subtle. But see if you can be aware from your easy chair. Just to know it, as if something is outside the window and a bird goes by and you know it. Just very simply know how you feel, regardless of whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Let it be. Just know it. And then return to your breathing. And perhaps ride the exhale all the way to the end of the exhale. But also see if you can ride the entire length of the inhale. And then letting yourself be at ease the best you can, open your attention to your thinking. And let your thinking just go through, like outside the window, outside the door. Just be aware that it's there. Don't get involved. Let it just pass through, like a sound passing through. And then return to your breathing. Letting go of your thoughts best you can as you exhale. Accompanying your breathing, breathing in and breathing out. And then in the last minutes of this sitting, you can continue with your breathing. But if anything else occurs, it's not a problem, it's not something to be in conflict with, not something to leave your easy chair for. If anything else occurs that makes it, that's more compelling than the breath, like the sound of the train, just let it be, and let yourself be aware of it as a present moment phenomena, known in a relaxed awareness. And if what happens is a lot of thinking, that's okay. Just be in your easy chair and just watch your thoughts. Watch them as if they're outside the window going by. And you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths to end the sitting. Connect to your body, your chair, the floor. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. It might be possible to characterize most people, mental activity, thoughts, thinking, reacting, feeling. We're thinking and feeling and reacting to something we're concerned about, something that's happening or did happen or might happen or something. We have some concern. The seat, the easy chair, the place of meditation is not in the concerns we have, but rather in the awareness that knows our concerns. So we're switching the attention from what we can know to how we know something. And I don't know if I did this before, but it's worth saying again. So if I have this strike bell striker, and I think it's a really cool bell striker. It's like one of the best ones in Redwood City. And it's really important that we have it here because we have to have a first-rate meditation center here with good strikers. And it probably says a lot about my status as a meditation teacher that we have a really good striker. And so it's really important to keep this. And some of you are eyeing the striker now, so I have to hold on really tight so no one takes it from me. And so I start by I'm really holding on tight. I'm so concerned about the striker and all the things it means in my life. And I'm so caught up in my thinking, my thoughts and ideas about the striker and you guys want it and all that. I don't notice that my hand is going white and going numb, holding so tight to that striker. But if I switch my attention away from the striker and my concern, the thing that I'm so concerned about, to feel what it's like to be holding the striker, then suddenly I become aware that I'm aching, it hurts, I'm going numb. And then I have a different evaluation. Is it really worth being so clinging to this that it hurts my hand? And I'd probably say, no, I can at least let go. I mean, you guys are good people, and it's probably safe to kind of open my hand and hold it lightly. But I didn't know to do that until I had to switch my attention away from the object of concern, the striker, to how I was in relationship to the striker. So the same way we use our attention, we have this wonderful attention that we use all the time. We're always, if we're awake, using attention. But we're always often using the attention to pay attention to something. And then we're concerned about that thing, you know. So if you're afraid, your attention is pulling back. If you're angry, your attention is going forward. And if you really want something, your attention gets kind of contracted and tight. The attention, and we don't notice that because we're so focused on the thing we're aware of. In meditation practice, we're trying to shift that balance. So we're also paying attention to how we're aware, how we are paying attention. And then if you notice how you're paying attention, then you'll get some important information. And you might find that you're paying attention too hard, or you're too pushing or contracted or tight, or too complacent or too withdrawn or too sinking away with awareness. So all those things you can notice. And as we start noticing how we use our awareness, mindfulness practice is trying to come into a place where we have a balanced awareness. It's kind of like if you notice your posture, you might be leaning forward in some situation and pulling back in others. But to be upright and balanced, you want to just sit upright and straight and balanced, you know, come into center. So the same thing with the mind, to bring it into center so it's not leaning forward, not pulling back, not contracted, not scattered. And that requires being aware of how we use the mind and how we use awareness. And the goal for mindfulness practice is to come to an awareness which is relaxed, open, relaxed, and alert. So we don't fall asleep, but we also not tense, just present for what's there. And as we do that, then that awareness becomes very useful because we can start then paying attention to everything that's going on. And the goal, another goal of mindfulness practice, is to be able to use this kind of relaxed awareness, clear seeing, ability to see clearly, and be able to meet any situation in our life that we're present for, anything that's going on. So if there's physical things going on in our body, to know how to meet those physical sensations with a relaxed, mindful, clear attention, without getting caught in our fears or our desires or our thoughts, what it means. If we have a strong emotion and feeling, to just know that's that in a relaxed way. Not get caught up in what it means to have the emotions and what has to happen and whether it's good or bad. Just know it in a simple way, balanced way. If the inner thinking life is strong, to just know that in a very simple, relaxed way. This does not mean that you have to kind of just, business has to go along as normal. It's actually very different than ordinary way. It's actually a way of finding our freedom from our experience, whatever it might be. If what goes on in the external world, we're having a conversation or something's happening in the world, same thing applies. To learn how to have this clear seeing of the situation, but be balanced and open and aware of what's there. And so the mindfulness training is a training in being aware, relaxed awareness, clear awareness, that begins to open up to the full spectrum, full range of everything that we can experience as a human being. So that everything we experience as a human being can be seen or held within this wise mind of clear awareness, of mindfulness. So that's kind of the direction, the kind of the goal for this practice. It's not easy to do. Some people, it's a little cliche. Mindfulness is easy. Remembering to do it is hard. So it's a very simple technique, but remembering to do it and do it continuously and not be caught by what's going on is the practice, the training. And it takes a while, so you have to do it practice a lot. That's why meditation is so helpful. You practice in meditation. And with time, you start becoming wise, a wiser person. And you're wise in a number of ways. One is become much more aware of how you work, your operating principle, what's going on inside, what drives you, the thoughts, the feelings, the beliefs, the emotions, what really kind of pushes you around and makes you do what you do and say what you do. It's really great to start seeing this deeper and deeper, more clearly. It also, you start seeing the cost of how you relate to things. Like if you're really grasping your striker or whatever, start seeing what it's like to be clinging and grasping and attached, and you feel that it hurts. And it feels like it's better to be present in a more open way. And rather than grasping, holding tight. I really like the idea that if you really want to hold on tight with your, you know, bring your fingers in together and make a really tight, hold on really tight. There's very few things you can do with the hand. You know, those few things are usually not very good. But if you can release your hand and have it open, then the soft part of the hand is available for all kinds of things. Then you can stroke a child's head. Then you can, you know, shake hands with someone. You can touch them on their shoulder. You can do, you know, you can do all kinds of things with your hand that you can't do if you're always tight and grasping and caught in something. So the inner life becomes so much more available to the world if we don't hold on. So we start becoming wise about our reactivity, wise about how we get caught and how we crave and grasp and get attached. And we get wise about that maybe it's not so useful to be that way. So that's a huge discovery that can come from just seeing what's there, seeing more clearly, more and more clearly. A very interesting area of wisdom that comes as mindfulness deepens and matures is we start noticing how much we see the world through our concepts. We have ideas. We have judgments. We have interpretations. We have bias. We have prejudice. We have preferences. We see the world through the filter of these concepts, and they can be quite strong. And sometimes, many times, people don't even know they're carrying them, just invisible to themselves. It's like this is how the universe was built. But as we begin meditating and mind gets quieter and quieter and we start seeing more clearly what's going on, we start watching and noticing how the mind makes concepts and ideas. And in meditation, as you get calmer, making ideas, making interpretations, having these kinds of concepts begins to fall away. And what you start seeing is you start seeing things directly for what they are, independent of these ideas. And it becomes very special to start seeing things directly. And it's very special to see the difference between something, what it is in and of itself, and the concepts we've overlaid it. So I'd like to do an example. So let's use this one. So this is a flower. Allow it to be one flower. It's actually many. And so there's this flower here. And I hold up a flower, and it's kind of nice, maybe you like this color, and just a flower. And if you look at the flower, it's just a flower in and of itself, the beauty of a flower, it stands alone. In Japanese flower arrangement, sometimes they only have one flower sitting on an altar, or a kind of little shelf. So you could highlight the beauty and the specialness of just that one flower. America, we make these big bouquets, you know, and like the individual flower kind of like disappears in the arrangement. But just a flower. So the flower or the flowerness, the beauty of the flower, just a flower in and of itself we can appreciate. But now we can do something very interesting. I can bring this flower into the... So I have one flower, the first flower is my left hand, and this much bigger flower now is on my right hand. And now I can say something that I couldn't say before. I can say the first flower is the smaller flower. And what's in here is the big flower. Now that seems pretty obvious. Smaller, bigger. But smaller and bigger resides in the mind's concepts of comparing two things. It's not inherent in the flower. Because watch this. I'm going to do magic. And I'm even going to let you see how the hands work. Okay? So this is a big one, right? And this is the small flower. big, small. You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. What happened to the small flower? Now the small flower is the big flower. Big and small does not live in the flower. It's the mind making concepts, comparative thinking. Tremendous amount of suffering in our life happens around comparative thinking. But comparative thinking is not inherent in many things that we compare. It's just what it is. And with mindfulness, we begin learning how to drop the veil, the filter of all these ideas and concepts that we walk around with and see things through, and we get to see things individually as they actually are. And that's really great for seeing yourself, because a lot of personal suffering has to do with comparing yourself to all kinds of things. You know, your hair is too short, too long. Your hair, you know, I used to be very concerned about the size of my forehead. You know, I used to be in seventh grade, measuring from my nose to my front line here. Make sure I didn't get, you know, I wasn't losing my hair and going bald. And I can tell you, I did it so much in class. I was bored in class, measure, and so I can tell you, it's still the same the way I used to measure it. And so concerned about my forehead was, you know, too much this, too much that, or. Or when I was young, there was, you know, hippie times. And you know, sometimes my hair was too short and sometimes it was too long. I mean, I remember once going from one environment, social group, to another social group. And in one social group, I was so cool. I was the coolest kid because I had the longest hair. And then I went to another social group and I had the shortest hair. And I was no longer cool. But my hair hadn't, you know, changed, you know. You know, from, you know, from one day to the next, hardly at all, right? Is I was comparing myself to different people. So we have all these comparisons we do, and we get caught in them. But part of the nice thing about meditation is we can drop these things and learn just to be present for ourselves in a very simple, direct way. It's very relaxing to drop all these things. And not only comparisons, but also think thoughts about the past and the future. These are just more thoughts that often keep us agitated. And to learn how to just rest in the present without bringing in the thoughts of the past and the future is a beautiful, wonderful thing. It's also a wonderful thing to do for our friends, for our fellow people, to be able to see another person for who they are and their own beauty. Everyone's beautiful. And to see everyone just as they are, without comparing them, without concepts and ideas, is a tremendous gift in a society where we do a lot of comparison, a lot of overlaying ideas and concepts onto people. And so this learning to sit and meditate and relax and understand how these things work, the concepts, and learning to relax and find out that you can rest in a deeper place of awareness, so just there to see and take in and see more deeply, is part of the wisdom part of mindfulness practice that comes with time. So we did a meditation. I gave you the story, this little analogy of the easy chair. And we did a meditation. And then I did this little teaching. Does anybody want to say anything? What that was like? Anything about the meditation in particular? Who was like to do that? Or any questions about that?
So I like the analogy of the house with the five windows. Some of my windows I find easier to let things go by than other ones. You know, and my thoughts, I didn't feel like the bird went by the window. I felt like the bird flew in through the window and was buzzing around my head. And it took me a little bit of time to realize that and then get back to the breath. Whereas other things, you know, I'm pretty calm today. My feelings, it was a little easier to just observe them a little more dispassionately. But I just think that was insightful to me to realize that those are much harder for me to just be with than other aspects of what I've got going on.
Right. Yeah, everyone will find that there's some things which are much harder to just be relaxed and present for than other things. And some people, sometimes it's thoughts, particular kinds of thoughts. Some people, it's the feelings and emotions that really kind of grab them. Some people, it's their body sensations that really focus on their body. Different things. And what we do in mindfulness practice, it's all okay for the purposes of mindfulness practice. You don't have to have any idea that you're doing something wrong when you're sitting there present, being mindful. But it's just one more thing to be aware of. So if you find yourself really hooked into some juicy thought, you know, the birds have gotten in and they're creating nests in there, then don't worry, because then your job is just be mindful of what that's like. Oh, look, this is what being caught is like. And you become a student of caughtness. You don't have to say, oh, I'm a Buddhist meditator, I'm not supposed to be caught, I'm supposed to be guilt, talk about being relaxed and at ease. I'm not at ease one bit. I'm failing at this. Nope. You don't have, there's no need to fail. It's just something else to be aware of. That's the beauty of this practice. Everything's just something else to be aware of. And if you can't be aware of the bird, you can maybe be aware of how you're batting it away, you know, or how you're caught up in it or something. So does it make sense? Great, thank you. So over here, Hillary.
So I have a hard time understanding what it's like to pay attention without using concepts to organize what I'm experiencing. Mm. I mean, I can't fully grasp the experience of the world without using concepts.
Yeah, but that'll come with time. It'll come. Don't worry about it. That's also something. Just be aware that you're doing concepts. And if the concepts help you to stay present here and now, like you're really being present here for what's happening in the moment, you're not thinking about yesterday, that's fine to have those concepts help you arrive and be here. But as you relax, you start not needing them as much, till finally one day you'll put them to rest. And then you'll discover something different.
So as I start to put them to rest, I start to fall asleep.
Yes.
That's the...
that could be. But it's very interesting that, we have... people have drink caffeine to keep them going, right? And they can override their natural tiredness. We have caffeine in our... I call it caffeine of the soul. We have caffeine in our head. And some people, it's certain emotions. Desire and anger keeps people going. And a lot of thinking, spinning thoughts, having ideas, it keeps us alive and engaged, and it overrides our natural tiredness. And it's also exhausting to do it. And so if you finally stop all the conceptualization and thinking that you do, then it might be a period of transition, just like they said, some people, when they stop drinking coffee, there's 3 days where it's a little bit out of sorts, you have a headache and all that. If you stop depending on concepts to keep you, you know, artificially energized, it might take a while to go through the transition before you find the natural energy. And during that time, you might be falling asleep. It's okay.
Is the comparing mind ever useful?
Oh, yes.
There's a positive way to use the comparing mind?
Oh, we use it all the time. Yes.
Can you give an example?
My wife sends me to the store and tells me to get the biggest jug of milk I can find.
I mean in meditation.
Oh, in meditation.
Yeah.
Yes, it's possible to know, compare states of mind. And it's possible to know that holding on to something like this doesn't feel as good as holding it like this. So being really caught up in, you know, what's your plans for tomorrow, and really kind of lost, don't even know what's going on here, you're thinking about tomorrow a lot and planning, you can compare that to what it's like to be resting in the present moment and really here, and that comparison shows you that one is more pleasant, more enjoyable, more restful than the other. And that's an important piece of information. But that's based on direct, tangible experience as opposed to some abstract concept. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that kind of comparison is very important. Mm-hmm. Yes?
taking that a little bit further, how do you differentiate comparing and judging? Mm. So, for example, I find myself...
Does that mean they won?
Possibly.
It was just a backfire, maybe.
I find myself judging my experience as I'm meditating,
yeah.
as opposed to maybe doing a more constructive comparison, yes. like you just talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah. So judging tends to mean that we're putting value on things. So putting value of good and bad, usually. And so it's... And that's not particularly useful. That's often based on some abstract ideas, some preconceived ideas, some learned ideas. Good and bad are not very useful concepts. So judging is more in the realm of good and bad. The comparison that Buddhism likes to make is it helpful or not helpful, as opposed to good and bad. So is it helpful for you to be spending a lot of time, planning the next year, what you're going to do. You're going to lay it out really carefully and to make sure every day you're going to know exactly what you're going to do. Is that helpful for you to really spend a lot of time doing that? Or is it more helpful to be here, really present, so you can be with your friends and really connect with them? So the question is, what is skillful? What is helpful? Is a comparison Buddhism likes. And that saves us from the things like good and bad, it shades into things like sin, or right and wrong. So Buddhism tends to say, is it helpful or not helpful? Does that make some sense?
It does, maybe, to take that back to my meditation experience. I will find myself, after I've been caught up in a thought, and I become aware of that, and maybe it happens a couple of times, and then I find myself thinking, oh no, I've just spent so much time of this meditation thinking and not...
Yeah, it's really bad. You're a bad person.
I'm failing at my practice.
Yeah. So what's interesting, that's great. So if we play this out, what you would do in mindfulness practice, you would then be aware of the fact that you were saying you were bad. And then you're like, well, this is what it feels like to be this kind of self-criticism, this weight. Oh, it's like this. This is how it is. Isn't that interesting? A great kind of word, if you need to use words in meditation, a great word is, or expression, isn't that interesting? Everything's interesting. So you get to, rather than being upset that you've treated yourself as the worst meditator on the block, you say, oh, look at this. It's interesting. Here is a mind that's making up these thoughts. I'm the worst meditator. And hold that as spaciously as you can. And then maybe you don't believe it, which just helps a lot. And just let it go. So, for example, it's very easy to have a busy life and sit down to meditate, and you're still thinking a lot about your concerns of daily life. So the mind spins off, thinking, and comes back, thinking, and come back, and you just can't seem to come back. So one way to see that is, boy, am I a lousy, no-good meditator. I am just like, an embarrassment to the human race. And I should not be doing this. That just feels awful. You can feel, oh, that feels bad to think that way. Another way is to say, just the facts. What's happening is that there's a lot of energy, and my mind is drifting off a lot, and the Giants must have won. Just the facts. So just to say that, so you said, oh, the mind's wandering off. That's what's happening. And now I'm coming back, and my mind's wandering off. It's wandering off a lot. I can hardly be present because I'm so powerful in my thoughts. So that's simple. That simple feels a lot better. So the comparison is, what feels better? Just the facts, just to see it for what it is? Or is it better to say, I'm an embarrassment. This is terrible, Is this making some sense?
Absolutely.
So to keep it simple. Yes, maybe one more, and then we want to do something more.
The hardest thing for me is the, quote, just let it go, unquote.
That letting go is often a very nice thing to do. If you can't let go, then we let it be.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So I hope that gave you a little bit of sense that as the practice kind of develops, new understandings beginning to open up, and that those new understandings are wisdom. And there's a lot of wisdom to be discovered. There's depths and depths of wisdom and understanding. And that understanding then will help you in your life in many ways. Mindfulness itself will help, seeing more clearly, being more relaxed, all will help. But the wisdom piece helps a lot. And at least in Buddhism, some of the upper reaches of spiritual development come with the support of wisdom. That, you know, so mindfulness first, then comes wisdom, then comes further development and growth. So one of the questions people often want to know is how they can go further with this basic practice. And there's a variety of things. So if you're interested in continuing with just a meditation, it tends to be helpful. It's helpful to do it regularly. And it doesn't have to be every day, but probably at least 5 days a week. It's really good to do. And if you miss a day, then maybe just do twice the next day to catch up or something, or twice a little later in the week. But the regularity of practice, like with any exercising you do, practicing regularly do you build up the muscle, do you build up the skill, do you build up the capacity. So, you know, practicing regularly is quite helpful. It can be hard to be motivated in a busy life to do regularly. And so some people find it's helpful to do things which are inspiring you. And so, it's often recommended that you go periodically to a meditation group. And just meditating with other people and knowing that other people do this and kind of that's a little bit more inspiring and energizing to sit with other people. And then you know that you're not so strange after all, because other people are doing it. And so it kind of gives you more kind of boost to come back and sit on your own. The other is some people find it helpful to, and there's lots of meditation groups around the peninsula all over, so you can probably find one that's close to where you live. And even you can go sit with the Quakers. You know, they don't mind if you're meditating. And they sit usually kind of quiet, and it's kind of nice. But sitting with other people can be helpful. It's also helpful to listen to talks or read books about meditation, Buddhism, or spirituality. Books that kind of speak to you in such a way that inspire you. Say, oh yes, this is an important part of my life. This is important enough to do. And so then you're more likely to do it. Someone told me recently, a 5-5-5 rule. So I never heard this before. But if you really want to develop a good habit of doing something regularly, you have to be committed to do it for 5 months, 5 times a week, 5 minutes every day. I think it's good to meditate more than 5 minutes, but that's if you can't do anything more, 5 minutes is good. But 5 months, 5 days a week for however long you do it. That, what?
5 times 5.
5 times 5. 25 minutes. somehow to have that as, if you want to make it regularly part of your life for a long time, you have to kind of get kind of it established. And that kind of, apparently, I mean, it seems like a great little idea, 5 months, 5 times a week. Just, you know, get into it. And then you'll probably find it easier to do after that. A very interesting thing to do is to do it for some period of time. I usually say 6 months, but it could be 5 months. Meditate on a regular basis, 5 days a week. And then stop for a week or two. And then compare. Actually, I like the word contrast. Contrast in my book is good. Compare is not good. And then stop for a week or two, and then contrast what it's like to have what the benefits have been from meditation versus when you don't do it, because then you have a track record to really compare it to. It's That's very interesting to see that. And then some people say, oh, I didn't realize what a big difference it made. My days go so much smoother and easier when I meditate every day. I didn't know that. It kind of grew on me slowly. And now I know. Now I'm really committed. Now I really want to do it because it makes such a big difference. Another way of developing the mindfulness, and both to support meditation and also develop it itself, is to apply it in daily life. It's a rather arbitrary line, the line between you as a meditator meditating and you as a person going around your life. It's the same mind, same heart that you bring with you everywhere. And so some of the higher quality of attention that you have in meditation, you can also bring to everything that you do in your daily life. And some people find tremendous benefit to beginning to bring more attention, more mindfulness to something they're doing. So it could be you start experimenting, something like washing the dishes. Say you wash your dishes at home. And then see if you can really be present for the dishes the same way you'd be present with your breathing. Your mind will wander off, but then you come back, let go and come back and really be there. Feel the experience of dishes, just you and the dishes. You know, nothing else. Just try to come back. Experience the full experience of dishes. Don't try to do the dishes to get them over as quickly as you can. Do the dishes to really be and do the dishes. It might sound ridiculous. Dishes don't deserve that kind of attention. It's a training to learn how to have this higher quality attention in whatever you're doing. So take something simple like dishes. It could be that you park your car a little bit further away from where you usually go, so you can walk further, maybe an extra minute or 30 seconds, and you do walking meditation. You try to be as fully present in the walking as you would be fully present for your breath as you meditate. Your mind wanders off, you come back and just stay there. Try to stay in the present moment as you walk and sort of cultivate that. Some people have mindfulness reminders. Some people have little timers that go off every hour on the hour, and then the bell rings, and they use that as a moment to just check in with themselves, be mindful. What's going on for them? What's happening? What are they thinking? What are they feeling? Because it's easy to go through long periods of time in the day and not really know how you feel because you're so doing so many things. For a long time, I used to do that with telephone calls. I wouldn't answer the phone right away. I would let it ring. Most people don't hang up. They're patient. We'd let it ring for a few times. And I'd use the telephone call, the ringing, as an opportunity to stop whatever I was doing and check in with myself, breathe, find out, you know, where I was feeling, what I was thinking, what my concerns were, what was happening. And I found when I did that, then I could actually be more present for the phone call and wiser in the phone call because I checked in with myself. I knew where I was at. So some people, what they like to do is to choose a different activity for every week. And that activity is their mindfulness activity for that week. So whenever they do that activity, they're going to cultivate presence and mindfulness in that activity. And then over a year of doing that, 52 different activities, you have the experience of being mindful of, it becomes a little bit like second nature when you start doing those. And then you find yourself much more present, and for some of you even better, much more at ease or relaxed in doing those activities. It's hard to be stressed when you're really mindful and present of what's happening. Stress usually a symptom that you're not really present for the experience in a full way. And a lot of stress has to do about what's in the future, what's coming, what we think other people are thinking, all kinds of things. But to really be present here lets us become much more calm. And the more calm we are, the more wise we're going to be. So practicing in daily life. And we have here at IMC, my co-teacher, her name is Andrea Fella. And that's her special. One of her specialties is daily life practice, she calls it. And she does a lot of programs here at IMC that supports people in exploring, developing their mindfulness in everyday life. And she has various series she does called Daily Life Series and different things. It's on the schedule. And so some people just love exploring their daily life and through mindfulness and then coming back. And they have this whole interactive way of talking about it and reporting and having discussions about what they're what's going on. The other way of developing the practice, so and the more mindful you are in daily life, the easier it is to meditate. And the more you develop your meditation, the easier it is to bring mindfulness to daily life. So they go hand in hand. The other way of developing the meditation practice and the mindfulness practice is to combine the mindfulness with concentration. It's one thing to be mindful. It's another thing to be mindful with a mind that's stable and steady, the mind that's centered. And you can get a lot more mileage from your mindfulness if the mind is really centered and stable and kind of concentrated. The analogy is that if you take a telescope, and you can look through the telescope and see pretty well, you know, through it maybe, but if you're trying to look at the moon and holding this big telescope in your hand, you can't hold it steady enough to really be able to focus well on the moon. You need to have it on a tripod, and then you can kind of really, you know, zoom into the moon. So the same thing with our mind. You need to have the concentration creates the stability of a kind of like a tripod, and so we can see much more deeply. The mindfulness can go much more penetrating than if the mind is kind of a little bit wobbly and kind of jumping around like that. And so there's a number of ways of developing concentration. One is just practice regularly. If you just practice every day, coming back to your breath, being with your experience, slowly concentration, steadiness, stability will build anyway. You don't have to do anything more than that. Another way is to go on meditation retreats. And it's a central part of our particular spiritual tradition to do retreats. They're silent retreats where people go meditate for the duration of the retreat. Here at IMC, we have half-day retreats on Wednesday from 9:30 to 12:15. And so you kind of immerse yourself during that time. We have day-longs on Saturday where you can kind of spend, you know, much of Saturday kind of practicing. Some of the day-longs, there's instructions through the day. Some are pretty much completely silent days where, you know, a group of 40 people will come here and meditate together and share the silence and support each other and practice. It's a beautiful thing. And then we have longer retreats in our tradition. We have our own retreat center in Santa Cruz County that people go overnight for retreats, from weekend retreats to our standard length is 7 days, 7 days of meditation. And it's a great thing to do. And this, it builds concentration, it builds stability. The mind kind of stops being so scattered around because you're settling in, it's a quiet, calm environment, and you're kind of practicing regularly all the time. Some people find that they develop concentration nicely by actually focusing on only concentrating. Meaning, take the breath and just only stay on the breath. Let go of any distractions, just stay on the breath, stay on the breath, and really develop a focus of being there. And that builds the muscle of concentration. That's different than the mindfulness practice we do, because in the mindfulness practice I've taught you, it's not only staying on the breath, it's actually learning how to pay attention to whatever goes on as whatever goes on becomes more compelling in the breath. But for concentration practice, you would not pay any attention to anything else, and just stay with the breath, stay with the breath. And the mind settles down sometimes and starts getting much more focused and concentrated. And that concentrated mind then can be used together with the mindfulness to have more penetrating awareness. So all this requires or takes some regularity of practice. And the benefits of mindfulness come the best from the regularity of practice. However, you don't have to meditate. Buddhism offers no obligation for anyone to meditate. And some people find that the principles of mindfulness that I've taught in this course are really helpful in their daily life. And the principles of Buddhism and what we're taught, and some people actually come and hear a lot of teachings and they just kind of apply them to their lives to live a bit better, wiser life, but they don't actually meditate. That's fine. That's great. Whatever works for you, whatever is nice for you. So, any questions now as we come to the end? Anything you'd like to ask about what I've said so far during these weeks? Thank you.
When I'm practicing, I get questions. And then when I'm...
Sorry?
When I'm meditating, I get questions. And then when I'm done, the questions have disappeared. But I actually wanted the answers to the questions. Is there any reason not to stop and write them down when they come in?
Some people do write them down so they don't have to think about them anymore. But it does distract you from the meditation. It does kind of keep the mind agitated. What's more interesting is that some people, it's a certain kind of agitation that's a common feature of some minds, that they're always questioning and wondering and wanting to have knowledge and wanting to understand something. And it keeps the mind from relaxing deeply. And sometimes actually, and so what might be interesting is don't give into it. Don't write it down. But stay in your easy chair and just know that here's a mind that wants questions. But don't get pulled into that mind.
Well, I haven't written any down, but then I come here on Wednesday and I don't know what those questions were.
Maybe you don't. Then you don't need them. Then you don't need those answers. That's okay. Just let them be.
Thank you.
So this isn't a question, it's more of a comment, but I went onto your website and I actually got the meditation app that I think one of your practitioners had created.
You mean the timer?
Yeah, it's some app for an iPhone or something like that. And I just wanted to tell people it's really, really useful. It's a really simple interface and really has helped me.
Great.
There might be other ones out there, but I use it. That's what I use now.
I'm delighted to hear that. I have never tried it.
It's really simple.
Good evening. First of all, Gil, I'd like to thank you. Thank you very much. It's been very inspirational for me. Uh-huh. I have a puzzle. Does my door have a door on it? And can I close it? And if it's closed, do I have to worry about what's behind it? I mean, I've built a puzzle into this just tonight's session.
Yeah. So what can we do with this analogy? That's interesting. When the mind gets deeply concentrated, then there's something in Buddhist language is called seclusion. The mind gets secluded from the sense data around it. So maybe you can say the doors get closed. And so you might not really hear a sound. You might not really, sometimes you don't even feel your body anymore. So you don't, you know, the senses don't really operate because you're so deeply calm and peaceful. And so that's called seclusion. So maybe you could say the doors are closed, or the curtains are pulled or something. And it's very cozy, it's a wonderful, nice feeling. Very safe, very comfortable, very relaxed. So maybe the doors are closed. So that works. But then what you said, you have to be worried about what's on the other side of the door. Yes. There are people who keep the doors closed for a long time. And the more the doors are closed, the more you should worry.
Thank you.
You're all so calm and blissed out, or just exhausted. I want to tell you a little bit more about IMC. You're welcome to come here. This place belongs to the community, and we have all kinds of programs here. That you can look at our schedule, and they're kind of suited for all kinds of different situations. We have programs, during weekday days. We have programs in the evenings. We have programs on the weekends. We have programs for children, young children, you know, different grade age kids. We have teenage programs. We have programs for some people call it young adults who are in their 20s and 30s. We have support groups for people with chronic illnesses and life-threatening illnesses. We have a Buddhism and Recovery group that meets on one Sunday a month. We have various classes and particular subjects and topics of meditation or Buddhism. There's a whole array of things. And you're welcome to come. By design, it's meant to be kind of casual and easy to come and go. You can come and go as you wish. The understanding is that people who live urban lives have often busy lives, and sometimes they have kids or responsibilities. And so we actually have kind of an open-door policy, come when you can. And there's some places, like in there, where this center, they close the doors at a certain time, and you've got to be in, and strict. And that's there's wisdom to that, but we're just kind of open, and you can come and go as you wish. We have no membership, is one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it is that anybody who wants to be a member is. It's that easy. But if you want to come and be part of our community, you're welcome to do that. If you want to come and sit in the back row and never talk to anyone, you're welcome to do that. So all kind of, you know, it's all meant to be kind of work for you and all that. People here tend to be friendly, but sometimes they're a little bit quiet. So sometimes you have to kind of like just introduce yourself or say hello or just be around for a while and people will start talking. But you're welcome to come and to our various programs we have. We have also this website that has all these, called Audio Dharma, that has lots and lots of audio recordings of the teachings that are given here, including this intro class. And some people find that a very useful resource to learn more and be inspired by. And then we have starting, I think it's, isn't it next week that the beginner practice group starts? Could you go get the flyer out there and make sure? But I'm pretty sure it starts next week for the next three or four Wednesday evenings. We have something called the Beginner's Practice Group, which is really a follow-up of this intro class. So for people who are interested in getting a little more support for ongoing meditation practice, some of the most senior practitioners here who do a lot of teaching now will lead that, and they'll do a little bit of guided meditation, a little bit review of the instructions, and some teachings about things which move on. So start next Wednesday? Yeah, 5th, great. So start next. And how long is it?
It is 4 weeks.
4 weeks, so 4 Wednesdays. And so there's a little bit of meditation, and it's also lots of chance to ask questions and be in discussion about the practice and what's going on for you. So it tends to be a very nice thing if you'd like to come back for it. So I think that's, what else should I say? Anything else? I think I've said what I need to say, unless you have questions. Yes.
Wondering if there's maybe a time to lose yourself in what you're doing. For instance, today I was just programming all day, and it felt like any kind of interruption from that. For instance, a timer to kind of remind me to kind of step back and be mindful of what was going on would just kind of interrupt me from the train of thought I was on. Maybe that's just kind of a fear thing speaking, but is there kind of a time to just kind of lose yourself in what you're doing and not take the time to step back and try to be mindful of what's going on?
I think so. I mean, getting absorbed in a good book, getting absorbed in a craft you're doing can be very good. You have to be mindful to do the craft, but get absorbed in it that, you know, kind of, that's all, your time goes really fast, you're just right there. But what happens is that it's possible to be absorbed in what you're doing and have that absorption be motivated by different things. It's possible to have it motivated by fear, it's possible to be motivated by greed, it's possible, by compassion, many things. And if it's motivated by fear or greed or something, then at the end of the day, you'll probably be exhausted. But if you can be mindful and know yourself well enough that you have this wonderful, relaxed presence that gets absorbed and fully involved with something, then it can be quite refreshing at the end. And so in Buddhism, there's a concentration function. The function of concentration, when it goes strong, is to have this get absorbed in what we're doing. And one of the great, it's really amazing, if you really get concentrated and mindful of breathing, of your breath, the breath can be better than any novel. You know, that absorption. The experiences of pleasure and delight of being is really some of the greatest that people can have in their life, just with the breath. And it's not because the breath is so interesting, but there's something that happens physiologically and psychologically when the mind gets gathered and absorbed in what it's doing. And the mindfulness practice is very important because that teaches you and shows you before, a little bit during, and after, whether you were balanced and relaxed as you got absorbed, or whether these were these extra stresses involved in that kind of activity. And so mindfulness can teach you to do it in a way that's nourishing and not debilitating.
Thank you. Yeah, I found that kind of doing routine activities like washing the dishes, it's kind of helpful or skillful to apply mindfulness to that, because there's kind of tension building around, oh, why do I have to do this? It's taking so long. Yeah, I could be doing something much better. And I think bringing mindfulness to that, I found some joy to come in and some relief.
Yeah. I was lived in the monastery for 3 years, Buddhist monastery, I went and worked as a fast order cook. And all my training in the monastery helped me be completely absorbed in this fast-paced work as a fast order cook, spinning around. It was like a dance in the kitchen, all these different plates and stuff. And I would leave work more refreshed than coming in, because it was just my practice was to fully be there without any tension, without any, you know, these debilitating attitudes that might be there. Okay. So thank you for coming. And, if you come back to IMC, please know that I'll be very happy to see you all.